The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray at rte.ie. Fishy man Martin Shanahan is going to guide us through the soundtrack to his life today. We're speaking to Dan, Phil and Libby, who are first daters. That's after 4 o'clock. And we've live music from the brilliant Moxie. They'll be brewing up a storm. No, that's a different band completely. But we have live music from Moxie today on the show. Yesterday, we spoke to Marie Collins about the conference that is going on in the Vatican at the moment. And it was mentioned there in the news because Eamon Martin addressed them today. And I'm just looking at the picture on the cover of the Irish Times. You've seen it already. It's point of view from the Pope. So you can see the Pope, but it's his back. And then out in front of him is a theatre, a lecture hall full of men over 55. All men. And you sort of say to yourself, well, if there was a few more women there, would things be different? Would they have approached it differently over the years? And the answer in my head is a resounding yes, of course they would. Of course they would. But until they look at a picture like that and they see that it's flawed, nothing much is going to change, I would think. Yesterday also we spoke to a lovely man, Jay Wilde. 73 Cows is a BAFTA-winning short film which features Jay and his wife Katja and their 73 cows. And Jay's story is an amazing story in that he was brought up on a beef farm in England. Well, firstly dairy and then beef. But he was, or is, a vegetarian and vegan. And he was a little bit ill at ease, that's understating it, with the whole thing of the cows being reared for meat, been put into a trailer and driven off to the slaughterhouse. So he decided to change things when his dad died. And as a result, some of the cows, most of the cows, are gone to a sanctuary somewhere else in England, and he has kept a small number of the 73 cows as pets. Anyway, lovely man, lovely gentleman. On the back of that, we got a communication from Kathleen Shanner. She says, hi Ray, thought you might be interested in this poster I saw in Tatty Hoker Health Shop here in Roscommon Town. Adopt hens. Can you offer a happy home for a few ex-commercial hens? They will thank you with delicious cruelty-free eggs. And there's a picture of three good-looking hens there. To adopt hens, or for more information, and it gives a WhatsApp and a text message there. Isn't that, doesn't Pauline MacLynn do that? Doesn't she? Isn't that why she makes those things? What do you call them? The hats for teapots? What do you call those things? They'll tell me. She knits those and she raises money for her charity, which encourages people to adopt hens. So also yesterday, it started sort of innocuously enough. We were talking about an initiative by MPs in the UK encouraging towns around England to brand their towns with little quirky taglines. And we started talking about Naas, nice place to shop, and Yall, the gem of the ancient East, and all that sort of thing. And then we got into a more serious chat about the future of our main streets. Because the lifeblood has been sucked out of them by online shopping and the fact that a lot of the big supermarkets are now located outside of towns. And it was mainly sort of negative. Well, Malcolm Byrne, who's a councillor down in Goree, he wasn't comfortable with the negativity. He says, I listened to your discussion on town development yesterday with interest. I come from Goree, County Wexford, which is an example of a thriving, growing town, where while we have challenges, we put our best foot forward in promoting where we live. As an example, the latest study of commercial vacancy rates shows that Goree continues to be one of the most attractive towns in Ireland in which to do business. Commercial premises vacancy is a good indicator as to how a town is performing economically. The GeoView survey is a joint initiative of Unpust and Ordnance Survey and is quite accurate. So, the national vacancy rate is 13.2%. The rate in Goree is 9.1%. with the fourth lowest vacancy rate in Ireland after Greystones, Maynooth and Carrigaline. Goree has lower commercial vacancy rates than many affluent parts of Dublin, including Dublin 2 and Dublin 4. As a town, we have a thriving retail sector, 6 major supermarkets, a number of local hotels and over 50 places where you can sit down and eat. We have a wonderful theatre, cinema, school of art and 2 of the largest second level schools in Ireland with excellent reputations. There are a number of reasons, this is the important part of the email, a number of reasons for this. As a community, Goree will promote our town and what it has to offer. Elected representatives, council officials, business people, the general public, we keep the message positive. Ours is a great town in which to live and do business. That message is self-reinforcing. The business community works with the council to deliver on local projects. We have had to fend for ourselves as we were not getting IDA visits or help from central government. So a local public-private partnership came together to develop a tech hub and the Hatch Lab, which is now supporting a number of startups as well as more established tech companies. We protect our main street in our planning. Our main street and the side streets are crucial to not just our economic well-being, but also to social interaction, people meeting on the street to chat, have a coffee. We will not allow out-of-town shopping centres and look to enhance the main street. As councillors, even though we are from different political backgrounds, we work together and speak with one voice when it comes to promoting and developing our community. You and your team will be more than welcome to visit Gorey. I'll happily take you for coffee in any one of our many excellent coffee shops. You can find out about what's happening on lovegorey.ie. I just ask that when this conversation develops again, that you look at those towns that are putting our best foot forward and that you feature the positive. We have challenges, but we can overcome them. So that's Councillor Malcolm Byrne, Gorey County Wexford. Thanks for that, Malcolm. And sort of related is this one from Seamus. He says, our national campaign is gaining some traction with over 30 towns and villages now committed to no posters in the 2019 local elections. I would love to speak to your show about the amazing numbers we calculated about this very topical issue. So that's coming very shortly. You know, the European and local elections and the posters all over the place. And 30 towns and villages are committed to no posters. And we talked about this before the general election the last time. There are a number of countries where you're not allowed to put up posters and they have these notice boards. And you can put up an A4 size poster for your candidacy, which probably makes sense to me. I find them a complete turn off. On more important things, coffee cake. They started a debate this morning about coffee cake. One person, Will, said it was like Marmite. They'd either love it or hate it. Neil is in the love it camp. Jen says, well, I can take it or leave it. I don't think I've ever had coffee cake in my life. Maybe I have, and I was unaware of it. I definitely never ordered coffee cake in a cafe or a restaurant. That was the debate. They're the important things we discuss. Drones were in the news yesterday when it held up proceedings out in Dublin Airport. Back in the news today, Limerick Mayor Kieran O'Hanlon. He wants to put drones into the skies to spy on dog owners. So it's sort of a drone pooper scooper type thing. So you have the drones up there and they can spot dogs when they're doing their business, and then they can follow up on the owners. Similar things have happened now in Holland. So a Dutch startup is set to release a fleet of drones to combat dog droppings left on the Netherlands streets each year, called dog drones. The vehicles will work together as a team to detect and scoop up the poop. The aerial drone is fitted with cameras and thermal energy technology that transmits GPS coordinates of the feces to a rolling robot on the ground that immediately leaves its hub to clean up the waste. Now, that's the future, lads. That's the future. And it's looking good. So you have the drone up there when it spots the heat coming from the poo, and then it sends a message to a robot who immediately leaves his little office and he goes, dibby, 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 dibby. And he gets to where the poo is and he scoops it up and back he goes and deposits it. That's the future there. That's mad, isn't it? It's Oscar weekend. It is Oscar weekend. And of course, the favourite, you've heard about it. It's there, nominated for 10 Oscars. And late afternoon, the work of Louise Bagnell and Cartoon Saloon. It's the fourth Oscar nomination. That's in the Best Animated Short category. And then Vincent Lam's Detainment, controversial enough short, that's nominated in the Short Live Action. And they're all attending. So will they get their gift bag? They probably will. Everybody who attends gets it. Or is it a two-tier system where only the stars get it? There's news online about what's in the goodie bag this year. So dental floss therapy sessions with a phobia expert, 15 pairs of luxury false eyelashes, a loo brush are among the items to be contained in this year's Oscars gift bag. They're saying that total value could reach up to over $100,000. That's a six-figure sum, isn't it? Six-figure sum, yeah, $100,000. So the big ones, the big gifts in the bag are a small ship luxury break to Iceland or the Galapagos Islands, I've seen loads of documentaries over the years about the Galapagos Islands. I'd love to go there. You know, it's where your man Darwin was, and it's you can learn an awful lot about evolution and the Galapagos Islands because it's so remote and so self-contained. So that's there. And also a glow-in-the-dark toilet plunger featuring a huge poo emoji as its sucker. It's called Mr. Poop. Yeah, and there's loads of cannabis products. And this probably reflects the fact that the drug has been sort of legalized in California. So you've cannabis-infused skincare products. There's a gift box featuring cannabis edibles and lotions, as well as membership to a pot-friendly Hollywood social club. So that's all there. And we'll be tuned in. Have you ever stayed up for the Oscars? Would you be... You get them all on Morning Ireland, don't you? You get the results on Morning Ireland. It's like the Eurovision as well. The best part of it is the result. And they've no host this year after Kevin Hart stepped down because of skeletons in the wardrobe or his closet or whatever you want to say. And they've decided to go with no host. So they're going to have a rolling roster of high-profile presenters, including the cast of the forthcoming Avengers movie. So that's interesting. I was watching the Brits last night. Hugh Jackman, did he present the Oscars one year? Well, anyway, he definitely did the opening thing. He did the opening at the Brits the other night as well. The Greatest Showman. It was a huge production. All singing, all dancing. He is the true showman, isn't he? He can do it all. He can act, he can sing, he can dance, and he looks good too. And he's seemingly a gentleman. So where's the catch? Where's the catch with Hugh Jackman? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Used very effectively by Impus in their advertising over the last few years. That's cruel. You've maybe yearned for coffee cake and the nearest shop is 5 miles away. A few years' time, you'll be able to go online and get a drone to deliver your coffee cake from the cafe 5 miles away. It's a disaster what people are doing with these drones, closing down airports, affecting passengers. People need to stop treating them like toys. I read a great article on drones today and I should have brought it down, but I'll get it for you. I think there's 11,000 of them licensed, but you don't have to have any qualification to get a license for your drone. So it's a bit like getting a license for your dog. What's the point of all the planning in small towns when I can get a parking ticket after 30 minutes in my local town? Town planning has lost to parking fines before they start. Thousands of people venture to Kildare Outlet, but I wonder how many venture into the town and pay for parking at lunch. Not many, I would say. That councillor has given you all the gory details. Hey, boom, boom. Mick, there used to be a graphic design business in Gorey called Gorey Details, which I thought was very clever. Speaking of Gorey and coffee cake, the best cake, or even the best coffee cake in Ireland, made by Stafford's Bakery in Gorey. My son has taken them over to his girlfriend's family in Lewisburg, and it's an absolute favourite to be taken over as often as possible. Gorey is great, says Anita. I see that Karl Lagerfeld has left instructions that he is to be cremated. Direct cremation. So no ceremony whatsoever. He just wants gone. And his ashes are going to be spread where his ex-partner's, well, his late partner's ashes are spread, and his mother's are as well. And he gave instructions that if his cat, Choupette, that if he died before him or she died before him, that their ashes would be spread as well in the same place. And he was asked by a French magazine about his funeral and he replied, "How awful. There will be no burial. I'd rather die." That's funny, isn't it? So an increasing number of high-profile people are going this way. David Bowie, he was cremated in New York in 2016 without any friends or family present. Not even Iman, his wife of 24 years, was there. And Booker Prize-winning author Anita Bruckner died the same year. Her death notice read, "At Anita's request, there would be no funeral." I said, "Yeah, is the funeral not a good thing? You know, where we're always told that we do death well in this country, and we do the funeral thing brilliantly. And it's, I would imagine, it's." Well, I know it's a great thing for family and friends because it gives them comfort and it gives an opportunity for people who know you through work or whatever to come around and offer their condolences. And, you know, at a time of grieving, it offers great comfort. So if you take that away from people, and that's personal choice, if you decide to go down the direct cremation route, well, what does that say about you, and what are you thinking about the people you're leaving behind and not giving them a full opportunity to grieve? I don't know. I'll have to think about that. 51551, ray at rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And now we've been following the progress of Karen Penny. She's walking the coast of Britain and Ireland to raise money and awareness for Alzheimer's research. Karen is on the line now somewhere in West Cork. Hello, Karen.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too.
I'm going to get this out of the way. I'm very jealous of you. Tell us where you are now and where you've been today.
Today, at this precise moment, I'm under a radio mast at the Mizzenhead Visitor Centre.
Ah.
Mizzenhead is absolutely wonderful here. And the sun has come out, the sky is blue, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful view here. Fantastic.
The most southerly point in Ireland.
It is.
Yes.
It is. And, you know, that's the beauty. I've been to Land's End and now here I am in Ireland.
Yeah.
At the most southerly point. What a fantastic spot to be on my walk.
So the last time we were talking to you, you'd been through Dunmore East and you were around to Tremor. So
that's right.
Yeah, go on. Where have you been since then?
Well, bit of a whistle-stop tour since then. I ended up walking the Waterford Greenway.
Yes.
Which is just beautiful, down to Dungarvan. And then from Dungarvan towards Middleton and Cove, spent a night in Cove, which was fantastic with some lovely people. And then I walked to Crosshaven and Kinsale. And then I spent a weekend and had a couple of days off at a lovely place in Timoleague, Sexton's Caravan and Camping Park.
Yes.
And they are amazing. Margaret Sexton, they're a lovely lady. And insisted I stay there a couple of days just to sort of, because I hadn't had a break since walking in Ireland and I really did need a couple of days off. So they've been fantastic. And they took me to Clonakilty, which is a gorgeous place. And I met the Clonakilty Voices, who were a choir there, and they had a bit of a night out and a very late night indeed. It was 3 o'clock in the morning by the time I got home. A bit of a sing-song, which we call it that.
Yeah.
And then from there to Roscarbery and Glandore and Lochhind.
Yes.
And then the night before last, I spent the night in Ballydehob with a lovely lady called Linda, and then I've been heading down towards Mizzenhead then. And from here, I head off towards the Barrow Peninsula next. That's my sort of next port of call, which I'm really looking forward to.
I remember staying in a B&B about 30 years ago, and I said to the woman of the house, I said, "What do you think I should do?" She said, "Have you done the Ring of Beara?" And I said, "No." She says, "Forget about the Ring of Kerry. You haven't lived until you've done the Ring of Beara." It's just...
Well,
so did I say I was jealous of you? The fact that you're doing it for the first time and you're going to see all those sites for the first time, I'm very envious. Do you know, by the end of this, Karen, you will know Ireland, well, definitely the coastline of Ireland, better than most Irish people.
Well, you know, I mean, and do you know what the good thing about this is that I've got so many people who are following my progress, even people in America who, you know, are watching and seeing where I'm going and asking me to put up posts and such like, because they're all following my progress and they're interested in where I go and the history of the place and such like. So, you know, it's a really good thing for so many people, you know, and I just love it here.
And
very,
hit,
very lovely.
You've hit two milestones recently.
I have. First of all, I've walked over the magic 500 miles now.
Yay!
So it's about 560 miles I've walked so far, and I've been singing that song. I can't get it out of my head. The
McLean
song. Exactly. And then you start me off again. Now I'll be doing all day tomorrow. And then the other one is in terms of donations. £25,000 has already been raised in 6 weeks towards Alzheimer's, and that's through such generous donations from people everywhere. You know, everywhere I go, you know, people are donating. The Clonakilty Voices had a bit of a whip round for me the other night and donated. You know, it's just lovely. People are very, very generous. And it's not just generous with donations, Ray. It's generous with people's hospitality and looking after me and making sure I can do this trip, you know, because it's a big old trip. And, you know, it's so much easier when people can give you a hand and look out for you. It's lovely.
And we were on to our friends in the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, and they're delighted that you're doing what you're doing, and they asked us, would we just mention their helpline whenever you're on? Just so we're delighted to do that. So the helpline of the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland is 1800 341 341, and they have an email address there, helpline@alzheimer.ie. You've got some good weather, haven't you? You've been lucky.
I've been really lucky. I mean, I can't really call what I've been through is rain. It's like a fine mist, but it still gets in your clothes.
Yes.
But I've had a week of no rain at all, and apparently the sun is coming out tomorrow for the weekend, so I'm told.
Brilliant. So you'll end up in Llangarriff there, beautiful part of the country, Llangarriff, and then off down to Beara, Castletown Beara. You don't have to go to Beara Island, but it's worth a visit. If you do.
Well, I mean, I'll definitely be doing that. And actually, I'm going to Glengarry tomorrow, because as part of my my walk around Ireland, I'm trying to get to as many park runs as I can when it coincides on a Saturday. So this is the first time that I'll be in a stone's throw of sort of Glengarry. I've got a lift there in the morning, so I'm going to have a tail walk at the park run and do my first park run in Ireland as well. Yeah. So that's really exciting too.
Glengarriff is the place, and Eccles Hotel there, it's an amazing hotel. Can you invite Penny to Beara Island? I've said it, and there's John on there inviting you to Beara Island if you can. You get a ferry out from Castletown Beara. It's lovely out there.
I will try that. That's good advice. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, listen, good luck. It doesn't sound like what you're doing is a huge challenge, but the way you describe it and you sound so good, it just doesn't sound like too much of a challenge to me. It sounds like you're having the time of your life.
Do you know, Ray, you just got to take one day as it comes, and then you've got to make the most of that day, and then you move on to the next day and it all starts again. And I think that is the only way to do this challenge and not think too far ahead. Just do it day by day, and then it all counts.
Well, we give you a bit of this just to celebrate your breaking the 500-mile mark. We'll take a verse in the chorus.
I honestly will not get that out of my head now.
Stay with us, don't go. I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be. I'm gonna be the man who goes a long way. Not many people can say they've actually walked 500 miles. Whoa! Well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I heaver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's heavering to you. Here we go! But I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walks 1,000. Karen Penny! We'll talk to you next week at some stage, maybe this day next week as well. So enjoy the Irish coastline, and well done. Brilliant.
Thank you so much, Ray.
See you, Karen. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE
Radio 1. No, I won't mention it, Martin Shannon. Don't mention it. Now they'll want to know what
are they?
They'll know. What are you not to mention? What are you not to mention there? That's Martin Shannon, and Martin Shannon is in to guide us through the soundtrack to his life. Good afternoon, Martin Shannon. That's the official welcome to the show. You're on tenterhooks because your daughter Lucy is show jumping in Spain.
As we speak. Yes. So I'm hoping she's in the arena now, and I'm hoping she's going to have a clear round.
Right.
And Lucy, if you're listening, which you won't be, but obviously, be home on Monday because you have to go back to school.
Right. What age is Lucy?
Lucy is 17.
Oh, right. She's in Leamington this year?
No, fifth year.
Fifth year.
Out of ponies and now into horses. So she's gone all the way back down to the bottom of the tier again, and hopefully she'll get up and climb up the ladder.
And was that something you were into? Horses or...
I loved horses. Yeah. They were in our family, they were in our blood, yeah. My grandfather had a horse. I think one of my first memories was the clip-clop of horses.
Yeah.
I think from the age of 8, he brought me to every pint-to-pint meeting in Cork. Pint-to-pints are a bit like, I suppose, the racing, right?
They're in fields, they're not in race courses.
Yeah. So, I mean, my memory of horses was always there, you know?
Yeah. And Lucy, where are the other children?
Jack at the moment is 23 and he's lucky enough to be in Melbourne. He took a year out and made up his mind there in July and said, "Mom, Dad, I'm heading off to Australia." So he's in Australia, and Ben is at home in fishy, I hope, at the moment, with his mum holding the fort.
Yeah.
Holding the fort, yeah. So all good.
Right. You know how this works, don't you?
No, but tell me.
It's pretty straightforward. I'm telling people the story of your life, and you tell us along the way what sounds you remember from various times in your life.
All right.
So you were born on the 12th of May 1962 to Tim and Eilish.
That's Eileen.
Eileen. Come on, Eileen. And where were you born?
I can't remember.
You must have been told at some stage along
the way. I was told, yeah. Funny enough, Ray, I asked my mum on the way up, right? I was driving up and I got to Kildare and I said, oh, I better phone her. Mam, where was I born? And she said to me, she couldn't remember either. Honest to God, yeah. She said, Mam, if you're listening, right, she said, I'm nearly sure you were born in St. Enns in Fermoy, which was like it wasn't a private nursing home, but it was somewhere where a lot of people in Fermoy would have been born,
right,
rather than having to go to Cork to the hospital, yeah?
Right.
So I believe I was born there, and she informed me that when she brought me home, she had no cot for me, or either that or the cot was being used, and that I was kept in the bottom drawer of a dresser in the front room.
See, I always think that's made up. That
it's not. Well, Ray, how could it be made up in my life? Right?
Sorry, Eileen. No, I'm not saying that you're making things up.
No, but see, I'm from quite a large family. I have four brothers and three sisters.
Right.
That's it. And then my mum and my dad and my grandmom and my grandfather, we all lived together in a three-bedroomed house.
Right.
Isn't that amazing? Anybody out there looking for an apartment, think about where we lived. Yeah?
Do the maths on that.
Yeah.
So where are you in the eight?
If you can be the middle child of eight, I'm the middle child of eight. So I would have been number four.
Number four, right.
I would have been number four. In my experience, and I think a lot of people that are middle children, like my middle boy Ben of three, you know, you tend to paddle your own canoe and you tend to kind of, it's not that you get forgotten, right? But, you know, either the younger ones are being reared and the older ones are gone. So I was in the middle. So I learned to be independent.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time with my grandfather. And again, look, mad into sport, bowling. You remember bowling?
Yeah.
We used to go road bowling, horses, anything to do, you know, and I started work at 11 years of age.
But you were still at school?
I was still at school, yes, of course, yeah. I was at school, and I mean, after school I went and I worked. I helped my grandfather. He'd done a couple of errands for a lovely family in Fermoy, Dick and Margaret Barry, and they had a pub and an auctioneering business and that, and my father would run a couple of errands, and I'd say he probably got a few bob and a few points for it.
Yeah.
No, I got no points. But as he got older, I mean, I would have stocked the bar and, you know, done those things. Like the bar only opened 9 to 5. Yeah?
It was great to get paid, you know, because I remember I was working at the age of 9 and it's just great to have your own money, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's the best thing that any kid can have, the independence of that. And I hope if any my mother is listening that I wasn't too much of a draw on them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because when you're 8, look, you know, when you're the middle child, you can see below you and above you. And my mother and father, right? I mean, you know, on a Monday, like my mum would open her purse. She wouldn't show you what was in the purse, but I guarantee you there wasn't a hell of a lot.
No.
So, look, I suppose from that time on, you know, you had your own money, so I would have bought my own clothes and I would have, you know. I probably picked out a lot of terrible things, but, you know, at least I justified it. I paid it myself.
Are you still picking out your own clothes?
Yeah, thanks. Marie, if you're listening, Ray doesn't like the topic.
No.
I'm only joking.
A bit clashy.
Yeah.
But maybe some people do that on purpose. So, what's your? You were saying the clip cloppy, and we had the clip cloppy there of horses, but people know what that sounds like. So, when was the first time you started to realise where you were in the world? If you know what I mean, like whether you were outgoing or you were shy or.
Oh, I'd say. Do you know what? I was shy, and I was quiet for a long time. I would be kind of in school. I would have sat at the back and taken it all in, right, without saying too much.
Right.
And I think, really, when I went to Rockwell, I'd done my Leaving Cert, left from I, didn't know what I wanted to be in life, believe it or not, right? But about 3 months before I finished my Leaving, back in the day, there was no career guidance and there was no, you know, probably direction, right? But I went to Christian Brothers in Fermoy, and across the road there was another school there, and there was interviews for Rockwell College to train to be a chef. And myself and a good friend of mine, we said, you know what, we'll scam the whole afternoon off, we'll go over. And luckily enough, I got the position. And from there, I went to Rockwell. I think really when I hit Rockwell, I realised, okay, this is the big bad world. Eh?
Yeah. And was that because you'd worked in the bar?
I think the bar influence, and I think serving people, you know, and, you know, I mean, back in the day, Ray, if you remember, you might have popped into the bar with your uncle or your dad or whatever, right? Guinness, there was two temperatures. There was cold and there was room temperature. So,
and Guinness drinkers are very fussy about
how
it was poured and who poured it.
And who poured
they
it,
They didn't
exactly.
want to see a young lad
not
pouring it.
Not at all. I mean, like, they would look at you, no, go away there, young flock. You know, Mary is the best at pulling points.
Yeah.
And after a while, right, to be fair, I mean, you know, I worked for another guy, Tim Duggan, and he was brilliant because Tim educated me a lot about business and just looking after customers. And I think I got that.
You got that,
I got that love
and
that. And I liked it,
And I suppose, whether you're consciously aware of this or not, you feel that you're good at it.
I think, you know what, I mean, the greatest satisfaction I believe in life is pleasing somebody.
Yeah.
That is my greatest satisfaction.
Well,
I love.
You're a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And you're in the business to please people.
Yeah.
Back in the day when you were pulling the pint, because I worked in the bar as well, did you have to, we had that, it's a ritual, isn't it? That you hold the glass a certain way and you pour it down the side of the glass. And then when the head is settled, we used to have a knife.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
You skim the top of the head off.
The old butter knife, yeah?
Yeah.
Remember, I don't know whether it had a bit of ivory in the bottom of it, but, you know, and it had to be a special, you know, it had to be that special thing. And again, look, everybody had their little quirk and that, no, leave it the way it is, don't touch it. And if they saw a bubble on the top of the Guinness, you were extradited. I mean,
it's all coming back to me now. So you sort of filled it three quarters, let it settle a bit, and then came back to it.
And then topped it up, yeah?
Yeah.
And then as the customer came in the door, right, I mean, Tim Duggan would say to me, Martin, what does he like? Oh, he's 3 3/4 a quarter. And what's he?
He's half and half. Yeah.
So what's 3 3/4 and a quarter? 3 1/4 cold and topped up with a quarter room temperature.
Uh-huh.
And the other person would be a half and a half. But very important that you memorise that.
Yes.
Because if you didn't memorise it and you upset the customer, well, he wouldn't ask you again.
And then there was a Smiddix with a Guinness head?
That's right, there was Smiddix and there was barley wine. And well, I never tasted any.
No, of course you didn't. No. Of course you didn't. Right. So you skipped on there to your leaving, sir. We just go back a little bit because you had a TV in the house, black and white.
We had a black and white TV and I remember it. I remember, well, radio was very big in our house as well, but definitely TV. But I'd say after school, in the spring, summer, we didn't watch a lot of TV because, look, I mean, I lived in a street with 50 houses. The family across the road from us, believe it or not, there was 17 kids. Next door, there was 8. If you came from my street, Clancy Street and from my, you had no worry about being beaten up or being threatened because if anything ever happened, there was about another 150 kids behind you.
Supporting you. Right, we've three theme tunes here from you don't look there, don't look there.
Okay.
I'll play them and you tell me what the programme is. Here we go.
The Flintstones.
The Flintstones is correct.
Yeah. What's that? Do it again. No, it's not.
Yeah, go on.
No, that's Sesame Street.
Yay! And number three, you'll get this one. So they're the programs you were watching back in the day.
Back in the day, I mean, they were the ones, right? And they were the, you know, you sat there and you were just glued to the telly, you know? And there was no mobile phones, there was no other distraction, you know?
Yeah. And well, it was a small house and you had what? You had 8 and 2 and 2. What's that? That's 12.
That's 12.
12 people in it.
And then my cousin, when we went to school, believe it or not, and we did go to school, all of us, right? Every day at 5 to 1, my mum and my grandmother, grey cooks, right? And they would lock the front door. And then if you were left out of school at 5 to 1, you'd run up, but you'd get in the gate and there was a little pathway. You went to the door was locked. And we had to create a queue. And my dad was always forced to get his dinner.
Right.
And after that, there was the table only held 6. So there could only be 6 fed in the first sitting. It's like a restaurant almost, yeah? So we're booked out. 6 in the first sitting. And if you didn't get on that first sitting, you either had to queue outside the door, you weren't allowed in. And if it was raining, you could sit in the steps of the stairs on the way, right? And then you got your dinner the second sitting. Yeah?
So you had your dinner in the middle of the day?
We had our dinner, yeah. Look, back in the day, we had our dinner in the middle of the day.
And it was a three course.
Well, food was very important in our household. And I think in any household back in the day, right, food was, you know, was fuel. And lunch was the big, dinner, I suppose, was served in the middle of the day. And my mum and my grandmother, and I think maybe that's where I got my touch of food from, right? I mean, we would have 3 courses. You were guaranteed there was soup in the wintertime to start. Then you had protein, meat, fish, chicken. You had vegetables, potatoes, yeah, and dessert afterwards. You know,
and then back to school with a
back to school with a full tummy, and you'd go to sleep for the afternoon. Yeah. You'd learn nothing. But I would say, if I can, Ray, I mean, you know, we always kind of, when I got older, I realised when times were tight, yeah, because they were great cooks, right? But when money was tight, we might have ended up on a Wednesday with stuffed sheep's hearts, or cow's heart, or a bit of liver.
And they'd been cheap from the
butcher.
And
they would have been cheaper. And nothing wrong, they're magnificent. They're magnificent cuts of meat, you know. And I think...
But they're saying that's a problem now, that we don't eat enough of the cow and the sheep and the
exactly,
pig.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you know.
And then that's why we have a problem with, you know, double... No, that's part of the problem. It's just that we're eating all the good bits and all the rest of it's gone.
It's gone, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We don't have that problem with fish, but we won't get into that.
No, no. No, because we would have had liver and kidney regularly.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Look, I mean, I think my own 3 kids, I'd have to ask them, have you ever had liver or kidneys? I reckon they haven't.
Right.
You know? And it's a shame. It is a shame, you know, but... Yeah. You know.
Right, so teenager, Rockwell you went at the age of...
At the age of 17 and a half, I went to Rockwell College.
So let's go back to then the sort of secondary school years then. Mm-hmm. What sort of a teenager were you?
I love sports. I played soccer and Gaelic. I played hurling badly. Always followed the horses. I think I got that, like I say, from a very young age. Yeah. But on top of following them, I backed them, you know. And I remember the first time backing the horses, and obviously my mum and my dad were big into, you know, a penny, a penny, a penny on a horse and that. And we backed the horse anyhow, and the horse was running at 2 o'clock, got home at 4, said, "Mom, how did the horse do?" And she said, "He's still running." We're like, "What, he's running since 2 o'clock?" So that was the term. He didn't do very well. He didn't do very well, you know.
You took her literally.
I took her literally. He's still running, you know. But I think probably growing up at 14, 15, I would have worked, like I say. I mean, I worked every Saturday. I started to work on a Saturday night in the bar, and then my friends would be out at 15, 16, socialising, and I would meet them still at 11 o'clock. Yeah. At night or half 11, and you know, they would have had a couple of lemonades, and I'd make sure I had the lemonade fast with them. And then we'd go to there was a very famous club in Fermoy called the Top Hat. And I remember seeing, look, all the big bands at the time, Horselips, and everybody and anybody there, you know. And you know, but I think, you know, now that I look back at it, I suppose I always felt I was going to travel, and I always felt I was going to, you know.
Fermoy wasn't big enough for you.
Jesus, Fred. I'll never be able to go back to Fermoy now, you know. I wouldn't say it was big enough for me, but I think as I get older, I'm very inquisitive and curious, and, you know.
So then cut to Rockwell. That's a catering college.
So I went to Rockwell as a trainee chef through an organisation called CERT, which is no longer, but a government organisation. The course was 2 years. When I say 2 years, it was 2 kind of school years during the school year. So our job basically was to feed the students, the paying students, right?
Because it's a boarding school.
It's a boarding school. Yes. So we would have cooked for them, and there was a farm there. Magnificent training, but I'm telling you, it was hard work.
But isn't that brilliant, though, the model, if you like?
Oh, the model is brilliant. And if I had an opportunity today, I would reintroduce it, you know, to the younger kids of today, you know?
Because you were fulfilling a function.
Exactly, yeah.
So it was real.
It was real. And we were feeding them. I mean, many's the morning, I remember around Christmas time, going out and picking Brussels sprouts, right? At 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and the frost and that, and those Brussels sprouts were served to those students at lunchtime, you know?
And was there any feeling of inequality there? Yeah, you know, that you were working in these boys?
Of course there was. Look, I mean, sure, like anything, I suppose, you know, when you're young, you don't realise, but, you know, you look back now, and yes, they were paying kids, and we were like the hired help, the cheap labour, you know?
Yeah.
But with the cheap labour, I mean, look, we survived it. A lot of us survived it. A lot of guys kind of gave up and realised after a very short time that it wasn't for them, you know. But I mean, we had to do everything then. I mean, you came in the morning. We started every morning at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock in the morning, got up. Half past five was mass, religiously, at half past five. You had your breakfast then at 6 o'clock, and at half past six, you were in the main kitchen.
Right.
And you were
away.
Working there and preparing for lunch, you know. And
Can you remember how many pupils were in Rockwell at the time?
Oh, I reckon there must have been probably 400 or 500 pupils, you know. So it was a lot of,
it's
you know.
It's a big catering.
It's a big catering, and it's a big, you know, it's a big, and on top of that, then you might do that for a week or every second day. And then the other days you were in class and you were learning all the...
Let's take a break for a clip. So where does this piece of music fit into your life?
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do?
I think around 18 or 19. Definitely, I was realising the big world was out there.
So where did you go to in the big bad world after Rockwell?
Rockwell, luckily enough, the first year in Rockwell, which would have been the summer, so I came out in May and I got a placement in the Butler Arms Hotel in Waterville, County Kerry, right down in South Kerry, one of the most beautiful parts of the world. And I worked with a great family that are still there, Peter and Mary Huggard. And again, they were brilliant, you know. They were so enthusiastic and so helpful and so willing to teach.
Yeah.
And I loved that, you know. And I just, that was really... Really, I'd say my first great love of fish, because I realised, you know, you could cook 100 portions of any kind of fish every night, not a bother. You could cook one fillet steak and the customer would send it back because his version of well done and my version of well done were chalk and cheese.
And when did you go? Was it Germany you went to
then,
first?
Yeah. Yes, and then luckily after that, I came back to Rockwell, went back to Waterville, and then Peter Huggard, if you're listening, Peter said to me, Martin, we would love to send you off to Switzerland or Germany for the winter to get a bit more experience and come back if you will come back to us. I said, I'd be delighted. So I ended up in Germany and I ended up in a city called Dortmund, very famous soccer club, Borussia Dortmund. Loved the soccer then and went and I worked there for 6 months, had a great time and had no German whatsoever, struggled probably for the first 3-4 months, homesick. Used to go into a bar in the center of Dortmund where there was a lovely old lady there and she could speak English and she said, I will teach you German if you teach me English.
Right. Nice relationship.
It was a lovely relationship. I mean, there was about 40 years of difference between us, but it was lovely, honestly. And I would have, I never went to school, probably looking back, I should have gone to school in Germany and learned a German. But kitchen German, anyhow, you learn it very fast because, and one of the things I remember coming back the first year was in Germany, in the kitchen, the chef would call the order and you always had to say, yeah, to answer. So he knew that you heard
understood,
it.
Yeah.
So when I came back from Germany the first year, I think I was like a parrot. Yeah. And they're like, what happened to you? And so came back to Waterville and then went back out to Germany and spent a year and a half full time out there.
Right.
And in that time there, magnificent restaurant with 3 different operations in it. And we used to do outside catering. So we'd done outside catering to this magnificent stadium where Borussia Dortmund play. And they had an indoor and an outdoor hall. The indoor hall was the biggest in Europe. So every band in the world came to play.
And did you cook for them?
Well, I personally put my hand in it. Yeah. I sprinkled the salt.
Like who are we talking?
Everybody from David Bowie, Supertramp, Men at Work, Pink Floyd, Christa Berg. I remember Christa Berg coming into a restaurant and coming over to me and shaking my hand. And his wife, lovely, and saying, it's lovely to meet an Irish person here. And that was 30-something years ago, you know. But yeah, it was, look, I mean, I had an amazing time there, you know.
When did you meet Marie?
Oh.
Is it Marie or Marie?
Marie. So when I came back, from Germany, I spent one more summer in Waterville. So that would have been 84. Then I came to Kinsale and I worked for Jim and Paul Edwards, great family, great employers, still there 50 years later. And I came to work with Jim and Paula. And then after about a month, Marie arrived on the scene. So Marie had come down from Cork, 16 and a half. I think I was 21 and a half, maybe. I think there's 5 years of difference. And we just struck up. And I mean, she was full of fun and life and innocence. And I remember one day putting a piece of salmon on the plate, and she said, "I don't recognise it." And I said, "What do you mean? We only have it in the can." But, right, you know, but, and look, in the afternoon, you know, when you're done a split shift as a chef, right, you're off in the afternoons, and we'd go for a walk over to the Bullman for, you know, probably a Lucozade and a packet of potatoes back in the day, or you go up to the folk house to play a game of pool or walk over to the dock. And I'd say, do you know what, after about 3 weeks, I asked her to marry me.
Did you? You're still together?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
That's 34 years together, and I think we're 32 years married, I hope.
Right.
You know, those numbers always get me.
Yeah. So, San Francisco, so ye, did you decide to go to San Francisco together?
No, well yes, of course, sure, I had to marry then.
Yes.
So we got married in 87, and then in 87, I convinced her. I said, look, I had a great friend at the time, Liam Dorgan, Lord of Mercenham, lived in San Francisco, born there, came back to Famai, went back out there, set up his own business, electrical business. And he said, come on, lads, come over. It's a great, great city, great time. And got married. And of course, Marie said to me, why are you leaving again? But I think that's the chef, you know, you want, you're always looking for the challenge or the next little bit of excitement, you know.
We have a clip here, because this is while you were over in San Francisco. And it happened in 1989. There was an earthquake. But on the same day as the earthquake, there was a big game on.
That's right.
So it was the 1989 World Series, Oakland Athletics featuring versus San Francisco Giants. And I think it was around the beginning of the game. And listen to the commentary.
He fails to get Dave Parker at second base. So the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we're having a nerve.
Open in the history of television, bar none. Yes, it certainly did. We're still here. We will be back, we hope, from San Francisco in just a moment.
And where were you when the earthquake happened?
I remember it, Ray, as if it was yesterday. I was in the kitchen in the hotel I worked in, the Huntington Hotel up in Nob Hill, and I was the chef in a big four restaurant there. I was standing at the cooker talking to one or two guys about what we were doing for the evening. And at 4 minutes past five, I can feel the cooker and the kitchen just shake, right? The pans, the pots, the plates, everything just crashed. And one of the guys working with me just caught me by the shoulder and put me under a door frame as such, right? And I said, what's happening? He said, it's an earthquake. I was like, oh. And I would say probably after 30 seconds, it kind of settled. Now you could still, but that, it's very hard to describe until you're in one, right? That kind of how it happens, you know? So,
You were lucky because there were a number of fatalities.
Oh, huge.
63 people were
I mean, the amount of damage. Luckily, I think they said the reason that there wasn't as many fatalities is because of the World Series. People had finished work early.
To go and watch it,
yeah. And again, if anybody, I'm sure lots of people, California Street, the top of California Street, Nob Hill, the cable cars run up and down there and go down to the financial district. And after about an hour or two, I mean, there was no mobile phones back then.
Yeah.
After about 2 hours of kind of straightening out and talking to the manager, I said, look, I just need to go and see if my wife's okay. So I remember walking down California Street and there was pandemonium. I mean, look, you know, there was bits of buildings falling out onto the street. And I turned a corner on Front Street where she had worked in the Royal Exchange, and the building next to her, all the top of it had fallen out. And I actually remember climbing over the rubble and going in. And when I went in, they're all sitting up at the bar drinking. How are you? You know, and I was like, you know, but everybody was in shock.
Yeah.
And it was shock.
Of course, now there would have been
mobile phones, yeah. But it was shock for a long time, yeah.
Now, we're running out of time. That's the way it always happens. Grew up with Martin in Fermoy. Great guy. Listening on my way to Fermoy from Bettystown to see my mother. That's Don Hammond. And I'm 51 now. And when I was born, I slept in the bottom drawer. So I'm not the only one, says Jacqueline. I was born in St. Anne's Nursing Home too, in Fermoy, good place. And my mother never sat down to eat. She ate what was left in the pot. The five of us didn't starve. scarf, says Helen.
Yeah.
And top hat for Moya. Remember the night Marianne Faithfull tripped and fell as she entered the stage many years ago, but yet a wonderful performance as Finbar and Cork. So there you go.
Right on.
Well, listen, you're flying it. The restaurant's flying it.
Yeah, things are great. Look, Kinsale is flying at the moment this week. Can I throw one plug in?
Will you? Better be quick.
Kinsale Restaurant Week. I believe it's booked out, but two courses for €20. It's been a massive success, and I believe it'll come back again.
Right. Maren Shannon, always a pleasure. Great.
Thank you very much.
Mind yourself and safe home to West Cork.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 515 on Ray at RTE.ie. Moxie have joined us live in studio. Good afternoon, lads. We have Joss, Richie and Darren, and they have a big gig coming up on St. Patrick's Day night. That's how you say it, isn't it? St. Patrick's Day night. It's in the National Concert Hall, and it's with the Symphony Orchestra. Better give it its full name, the RTE National Symphony Orchestra. We're going to talk to Joss later on, but first the lads are going to do a tune for us. They call it Accordion Wars. You've heard of Julian Banjos. This is Accordion Wars. The official name is Joe Durans. When you're ready, Moxie. Amazing dexterity, Josh and Darren. Let's call it a draw. Let's call it truce. That was amazing. That's Joe Duran, Moxie, and they're playing with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra in the National Concert Hall on St. Patrick's Day night, and they're going to stay with us and play us another tune before the end of the programme. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, First Dates is in full flow every Thursday evening on RTE2, and we've been checking in occasionally to talk to some of the people who have featured. And today, we're going to be talking to Libby and Dan in a moment, but first, from last night, we have Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
How are you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you. Phil Penny. Now, people will know you from California, if they watch that. And if they're fans of First Dates, they'll know that you were on last year and you were back for a second date this year.
Yeah.
So will you tell people your story briefly, your first date story? What happened last year?
Yeah, well, with the first date story, so basically I went in last year. I was seeing a lad going in and... Look, I was out for a 30th, a mate of mine's 30th, and had one too many drinks on that night. Woke up the next morning with a bit of a headache, so decided to go to the Gibson Bar on the same day I was supposed to be filming the date for First Dates Ireland. And had one too many points watching the Man United game and walked into the bar and, just kind of...
This is before you went on to record First Dates?
Yeah, just before I went on to actually record. I had one too many drinks and probably the way I let my guard down and said a few things I shouldn't have said, probably.
So what was the girl's name in last year?
Amy Marie, her name was.
Amy Marie. And and I know we only see an edited package, but you didn't come across that well, Phil, did you, in the things you said to Amy Marie?
Amy, no, definitely not. Obviously, you guys only see an edited package. They only show snippets what they want to show and the most juicy parts, obviously. I did kind of make a bit of a fool of myself, and the reaction that I got online on Facebook and Instagram, stuff like that, wasn't pleasant reading, you know, that kind of way. So I said,
and when you watched it back, Phil, how did you feel?
I felt a little bit embarrassed for some of the things that I said. They were a little bit uncalled for.
Yeah.
I suppose a few years ago I'd done California, and I suppose I probably thought that I was still in that frame of mind to be the bad guy and the lad off California who gets drunk and chases women and doesn't think before he speaks, and I suppose I was probably still playing that persona going into the restaurant as well.
And you're older, you should have been wiser. What did your mother think of your appearance last year?
She wasn't impressed. She gave me the phone call and wasn't impressed. Said, look, we didn't raise you to be that way or speak to women that way. So kind of why I wanted to go back last night and kind of give it another stab and kind of show the public the real side of me instead of the drunken side.
You wanted to right the wrong.
Exactly.
So So last night you were with Rachel.
Yeah.
You were watching your P's and your Q's.
Yeah. Well, I tried to.
Yeah, so you eased off on the drink. What was it in your head going in there? Was it solely to paint a different picture of Phil Penny?
I suppose it was, yeah. So I wanted to go in and just let the public see me for me without any drink, without trying to show off or be this type of lad that, like, it's you're going to get caught out eventually. So I just wanted to show the public the real me and just me for me without having any drink or saying things that I shouldn't have said. And look, I suppose I came across a lot better last night. I've had a much more positive reaction on Facebook and other social media platforms this morning than what I got last year.
Yeah, so you learnt a bit of a lesson from that. I suppose Rachel saw through your motives for going on First Dates for a second time.
Yeah, she saw right through it. She kind of understood that, look, he's only here to redeem himself and not to actually find love, which was true, and it was cut out in the end, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
And you won't probably be welcoming New Ross
probably not anytime soon
by what you said at the end. For people who didn't see it, Rachel's from New Ross, and Phil commented that she wouldn't get much better than him down in the pub in New Ross. There's another part of this story in that you have big news today.
Yeah, I've got some massive news, the biggest news of my life. I'm actually standing in the car park in the Coombe at the moment as we speak, as my girlfriend Laura is up in one of the beds currently going into labour. So, I just...
Do you know what she's having?
Yeah, of course I do, Ray. It's a baby boy.
Right, well, sometimes I didn't know, for example. It's not a given that you know, okay?
Yeah, well, I suppose they don't always tell you, but we want to know.
Okay.
Yeah, we're having a little baby boy and we're excited and looking.
Oh, brilliant.
I wanted to put my right my wrongs and move forward now with my own little family and leave that in the past.
Congratulations. And is Laura in labour now?
Laura is, she's in the kiln now at the moment. She's upstairs in one of the beds, and she is gone into labour, but it's a slow labour.
Slow labour, right, okay. Yeah. I suppose people online are intrigued by the maths and all this and the timeline, as they call it.
Yeah.
Okay. Go on. So,
well, I suppose the filming was at the start of summer, and I suppose me and Laura were kind of only getting to see each other, but not official. I don't really want to say too much about my public life or my private life too much. You know, I kind of have to respect her as well.
Right. Yeah.
But shortly after the date, anyway, me and Laura made it official, and we are officially a couple. And soon after that, as well, I also discovered that we were going to be having the baby boy.
Right. Well, congratulations. Pass on our congratulations to Laura. I hope everything goes well.
She's up there in the bed now. We want to give her a shout out.
Yeah. Hiya, Laura. Yeah. Congratulations. Thanks for taking the call, Phil.
No worries, Ray.
See you now.
Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Phil from last night's first dates. We've Dan from last week's. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
We get a microphone to you there. You have it there. And we have Libby then from a few weeks ago. We spoke to you on the phone.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in. Dan, I'll go to you first. Tell people your story if they haven't seen you on the telly.
So my story is I was born, I have a condition called cerebral palsy. But I would describe myself as differently abled.
Differently abled. That's a lovely phrase.
Yeah, I think so. There's the biggest misconception, I suppose, with disability, but I suppose people in wheelchairs is that they need things done for them, and which is true, but I like to be as independent as I possibly can be.
Yeah.
And I think, if I think about my motivation behind applying for first dates to begin with, it was, there's been a lot of experiences that I've gone through that I've thought about it way too much, because I worry so much, and I worry about, you know, what will people think, and, you know, what if I say the wrong thing or something like that. So I think the whole thing around first dates was just do it and don't worry about the consequences and see what happens.
Right.
And
what were the consequences, do you think?
I mean, to be honest, a few weeks since, and I'm still trying to put it into words. The whole experience has just been incredible. I'm very grateful to Rachel, because she made me feel, Rachel my date, she made me feel very, very comfortable.
A different Rachel. We're talking about
different
two Rachels.
Rachel,
yeah.
Different Rachel.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to say that we're still friends.
Great.
There's nothing romantic there, which means I'm still on the market.
I cried watching it.
Oh, thank you.
I did. No, because you were talking about, you know, when you were born and your parents were told that you'd never walk, never talk. And you say that line about your dad that you would be able to write your own name. And you've done an awful lot more than write your own name. But it's just very, very moving.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think, to be honest, they told me that story, and I think it's transferred on to me that it's kind of like, I want to do the best that I possibly can with what I have. And just because I'm in a wheelchair doesn't mean that I can't experience, you know, maybe not the exact same things that everybody else, but the same things, just in a different way.
Different way. Differently able.
Exactly.
That's my new favourite phrase now, differently able. Thank you for that. Is that your own creation, or is it... Have other people used it?
I suppose maybe other people have used it. I don't want to be in trouble with copyright.
Copyright. So you're a student, a media student. You're doing creative digital media.
Yes.
Libby is beside you. Libby, you're, can I tell them your age?
66 in another month.
Right, well, you've done it, right. mother of six.
Yes.
Mother of six and widow.
Yes.
Who did you go on a date with? Julian. Lovely man.
Very nice. Yeah.
Why did you decide to do first dates?
Oh, I didn't. My children put me forward, my eldest daughter.
Yeah.
And I even cancelled because I had already been invited away when they were filming. But because I'd had a concussion on my good horse, I wasn't able to travel by air for more than a 50-minute flight for at least 3 to 4 months. So
you had to do first dates.
So
then.
I decided maybe, you know, I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind.
We spoke to you on the phone and we established that yourself and Julian didn't work out.
Well, not in the romantic way.
Not in the romantic way,
but
yes.
But he was just a lovely gentleman. Yeah.
So what was the whole experience like for you, and has it still got knock-on effects?
Well, it's interesting because I haven't dated for years, and to have to go to extra trouble at my age, it's you know, I don't usually stay up past 9 or 10 p.m. But I do get up early, I'm trying to see, can I change my lifestyle now?
Are you getting offers?
Oh, I never kiss and tell, Ray.
All right. You talked, Dan, about doing online stuff, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, I think the difficulty for me with online is that it's just pictures and a bio. So for me, I think the biggest thing for me is that people take the time to get to know who I am. And I think that's a big thing, because when you're in a wheelchair, as I am, you know, the automatic thing is you see
the wheelchair.
Yeah. Exactly. And I don't blame people for that, because it's natural and it's an adjustment. But I think that's the important thing, because there is a lot more to me than just that.
Yeah. And you got a huge positive reaction.
Oh, it's been, as I said, it's been absolutely incredible. Yeah. I'm still speechless over it. I mean, I'm just so grateful to everybody. So thank you all for.
And he's so handsome. Okay?
Yeah. And you got a positive reaction as well, Libby.
Yes, but yeah. My kids have to always show me, because I'm not very technical.
Right, okay. So they point you towards the positive reaction on social media. Yes. Apologies about our lift, Dan. I know that was a little bit of something you could have done without before you came on. But so good to see you. And it was a pleasure watching you both on First Dates.
Thank you.
It's such a brilliant program, isn't it?
Oh, wonderful opportunity to see how things work and how magical you forget about cameras. You just get to be yourself.
Yeah. And then we're privy then to the magic of romance and love and all that.
Okay.
As a viewer, that's why we're watching. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, stay where you are. Moxie are behind you there. And the lads are playing with the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra in the National Concert Hall on St. Patrick's Day, which is a big event for them. D-Rock's Polka. They're telling me it's 3 minutes long. So Joss, Richie and Darren, when you're ready. was great. That's Moxie and Erox Polka. Thanks very much, lads, for coming in. Thank you. Libby, thanks you. And thank you very much again. Tomorrow night on the telly, Eamon Dunphy is dropping in for a chat. We've Demi Isaac Obiawi from Dancing with the Stars. And we have that tragic, but I suppose life-affirming story about Kim Wall. She was the journalist who was murdered on a submarine off the coast of Denmark and Sweden in 2017. And her parents, Ingrid and Joachim, are coming in to tell us her story and their story tomorrow night on the telly. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back on the radio 3 o'clock on Monday. Have a great weekend.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.